ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் shaivam.org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் ரிலேஷன்ஷிப்ஸ் வித் அதர்ஸ், யூஸ் குருதேவாஸ் டீச்சிங்ஸ், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Our last few weeks have been filled with two very special events. First, we had Gurudeva's Mahasamadhi observance, then Skanda Shashti. A high point of the Mahasamadhi observance for many pilgrims was the final day's Guru Puja performed by Janahan. Many of the pilgrims tangibly felt Gurudeva's powerful presence during the puja and were quite uplifted by it. Others mentioned that the meditation that was held at the Swayambhu Lingam was the best meditation they ever had in their life. And still others found the suggestions of how to deepen one's inner plane contact with Gurudeva during sleep to be quite meaningful. Skanda Shashti was special this year in that so many devotees perform walking prostrations as a penance, a prayaschitta. Some even decided spontaneously after doing it once to do it on the following day as well. For those listening to or reading this talk on the web, let me explain this practice a little. Traditionally, at the time of major festivals to Lord Murugan, such as Thaipusam and Skanda Shashti, Hindus worldwide perform penance as a way of burning up negative karma and atoning for misdeeds. The specific form of penance that Gurudeva sanctioned for the Adinam is walking prostrations on our Sanmarga path, starting at the Rudraksha forest and ending at the Swayambhu Lingam. The basic idea is that you prostrate and then take a few steps forward to the spot where the top of your head reached. Then prostrate again and keep repeating the process. To go from the Rudraksha forest to the Swayambhu Lingam takes a few hours in this manner. With these two wonderful festivals passed, we are settling down to a normal routine at the Adinam and are recollecting that we have about 6 weeks left in our current sadhana season, which is the Jivana Ritau from mid-August through mid-December. The Master Course book for this Ritau is, of course, Living with Shiva, and gives us, just by the title, the general focus for this Ritau, which is to think about our life, actions, and conduct in the external world and strive to bring into it more refinement and more religion. Gurudeva also describes the season as a natural time for work, that it is a physical time, a time of exercise and an exertion in the physical world, a magnetic time for action and willpower. The focus is on preserving what has been created, manifesting goals and fulfilling plans made in the past, finishing jobs already started. It is a natural time for caring for the practical details of the external world, including the environment. Gurudeva gave us a number of special sadhanas for the Jivana Ritau. The main study is the Nadinada Sutras, both at home and at the Mission Satsang. Specifically, go through the sutras as well as review your daily sadhanas, looking for the ones that have been neglected or totally ignored. Strive to make improvements in those areas. Bring up to date all viratas and sadhanas in which you have gotten behind. In addition to these general sadhanas, which apply to every year's Jivana Ritau, this year we have also been working on a specific sadhana, which is facing difficult situations. This sadhana is described as follows. As we know, life can give us difficult situations to face. We are treated unfairly. Our friends seem to turn against us and no longer be trustworthy. Our feelings are hurt by how we have been spoken to and treated by another. Sound familiar? It is easy to be happy and content when we are not facing difficult situations. The challenge is to find a way to be happy and content, even in the most difficult of situations. Handling these difficult situations without emotion and with wisdom is, of course, the key. The suggested response has three principles which we are all familiar with, which are forgo retaliation, accept responsibility, and forgive the offender. Deuteronomy has a verse that encompasses all three of these principles together. If you return kindness for injuries received, and forget both, those who harmed you will be punished by their own shame. That's a subtle form of retaliation. You get back at them by their own shame. Very subtle. This Quran gives us an effective solution to the problem of the tendency for man to retaliate and not forgive. It shows that human nature has not changed much since the 2,200 years ago when the verse was written. Of course, we all know that this is great advice and are, of course, striving to follow it. However, the question is, how well are we following it? How can we effectively evaluate our application of these principles to our lives? A simple but effective way of self-evaluation is to look at the nature of relationships with others. How many of the people we relate to regularly do we feel close to and speak freely with? How many do we dislike and only speak the minimum to? Of course, it is this latter group that is the basis of self-evaluation. For someone to be in this group means they said or did something to us in the past for which we have not forgiven them and forgotten the event. The larger the group, then the more we are not following the principle in our life. Gurudeva gives us some very useful advice in this regard. Quote, holding hard feelings against other people without letting them go and realizing that it is all in the experience of life itself. Whatever happened to us is our own creation. To run away from the situation without solving the situation, without making amends, without harmonizing the prana flow of energy between us and others, or between us and ourselves, is detrimental because it creates more karma. Unquote. One reason we may tend to hold grudges is that in growing up, our parents or other elders in our family often did so. Therefore, we think that this is acceptable form of behavior. Therefore, we think that this is an acceptable form of behavior. However, as Gurudeva points out, for those on the spiritual path, it definitely is not acceptable, as it keeps the lower chakras stimulated. In summary, an important part of making progress on the spiritual path is resolving misunderstandings, hard feelings, and disagreements as soon as they occur. Don't give in to the tendency to classify someone as a person we dislike and hold and even take delight in holding a grudge against them for how they treated you or what they said to you. Set as a goal having all of your relationships in the category of those we feel close to and none in the category of people we dislike. As Gurudeva puts it, a spiritual man always has to have the upper hand on the lower nature. Om Namah Shivaya.
So a little trip story, since the talk is so short. I think each country we went to, there was something new developing and was different in each country. In Mauritius, the children stood out. There were lots of them, and they sang beautifully and got along beautifully and really enjoyed one another's company. And this was apparent at the gatherings at the spiritual park as well as at the different Kutumba meetings. So most of the children are children of members, but some of them are just children of friends of the spiritual park, children of students or old members. So it's quite a large group, and so we're focusing this coming year on our teaching program, which is on Saturday at the Dharamsala there. So it's going to start up again in January. It's taken a short break. And so we're working with Rajan Manik, and we will be also working with one of our newer members, Logadasan Paraman, in developing a nice course for the children there, utilizing the material. So that's very nice to see, and shows a nice potential future growth for the church there. In Malaysia, the Core Youth Committee, CYC as they call themselves, is a nice aspect of the group there. There's a number of youth in Malaysia is anyone up till 30, approximately. So youth is about age 18 to 30, or the youth. And under Arvind Raj's coordination, they're focusing on teaching the Master Course Trilogy. And the age group they're focusing on is 16 to 21. So they've developed a series of 26 classes to be held every other week for a year. And just about to launch, they plan either to launch in November or in January. They have all of the classes outlined, and they've shared the outlines with me, and I made some suggestions. And so they're ready to go. And it's about 20, I think, in the group that attend the teachers' meetings. So they're very, very serious about doing this in an organized and precise way. So they have a seminar that leads into the classes, Master Course Seminar, that they can hold at any time, and then the classes, when someone starts out, it's every other week for a year is the cycle. So they're going to start with just one class in the Klang area and go through that for a year as a test to work out all the bugs in the system, perfect their materials. And then after the year is over, update the material, and we will also look at the material once again more closely. And then they'll start teaching in multiple places throughout Malaysia. They want to start a class up in the Penang area as well. So that's a nice development there. It's coming up all from this group themselves. You know, just really interested in basically bringing in other youth into the church. That's their motivation. They feel they're the best group qualified, rather than their parents, to bring in other youth. No generation gap. So that's a healthy sign and should lead to some new members there in a few more years. And then in Singapore, we had a new phenomena. The Senpaha Vinayagar Temple there, Ganesha Temple, Sri Lankan Ganesha Temple. Many of you have been there, I'm sure. It's on Ceylon Road. Can't miss it, knowing which one it is. Is looking to us for help in developing a children's course that they want to release in November. It's kind of unheard of time frame. They want it all done in a couple of months. So we were talking to them, and the course is, they want the course in Tamil language, so the children are also learning Tamil at the same time. And so we were talking about the course, and finally I asked a direct question, you know, well, how would you describe the course? You know, what is it, what is its focus? How do you envision it? And they said, oh, we wanted a course on Saivasiddhanta. So this is unusual, of course. Most temples don't want to teach Saivasiddhanta. when I teach some general form of Hinduism or something, but first temple that's ever said we want a course on Saiva Siddhanta. So we emailed back immediately right during the meeting. We sent one of the monks upstairs to email back from the room and get some material sent over. So they're going to be using our Saivite Hindu religion children's course, as well as other materials we're providing, a copy of the Tamil translation of Dancing with Shiva that we have, very useful for that, and Tamil Tirukural, modern Tamil, they've never seen that as well, very useful, yamas and niyamas, and other things will be being sent over in the next few weeks as well. So that was really inspiring that they're turning to us. Of course, as you know, the Hindu Center in Singapore already turned to us for help in their children's course. And we're calling that an all-denominational course on Hinduism. They wanted a non-denominational course, and Arumugaswamy talked them out of that by explaining there's no such thing. Hinduism is denominational. You know, you can't teach it without referring to the denominations. There's no such thing as non-denominational Hinduism. So they agreed, and so we've been teaching all denominational Hinduism, and it's under the coordination of Shiva Kumar, Saravan. So we pointed out the material in the current issue, October issue of Hinduism Today, which is on the four denominations. You've all gotten that issue? Have you seen that? Has it come? Not yet. So it comes in the month of September, so it should be there soon. So it's on the, it's like a center section on the four denominations. Beautiful artwork and write-ups and material comes from Dancing with Shiva, but it's much more impressive when it's in color and illustrated. So he's going to, he's asking for those files so he can make a poster for the Hindu Center and stick it on display there so that the Hindu Center is promoting the four denominations. It's turning into an important theme, the four denominations, because quite often Hinduism is being presented without that fact. And it's, if you don't know that, that Hinduism has four different ways of looking at things, Hinduism can be very confusing. You run into lots of contradictions and lots of misunderstandings can develop. So the Hindu Endowments Board, for example, has a Shivan temple there, and they had a big sign on Hinduism, poster on Hinduism at the front entrance there. And so I was reading it with Dohadeva and going through each paragraph and commenting, you know, like a school teacher, oh, this is wrong, that's wrong. This is right, that's good. So they had some very good points, and they even used the word superconscious. I said, now where did they get that word? Must be from Gurudeva's writings. They said the superconscious revelations of the rishis produced the Vedas, something like that, right out of our work. And so they had some very good points, but then when it came up to describing Hindu worship, they presented just the smarter point of view. You know, all the gods are really the Supreme Being and different symbols of the Supreme Being, something like that. So I said, wait a minute. It's going through with Dohadeva, and I said, you know, that's smartism. And what they should have there is the four denominations. So it's clear. And so Dohadeva said, well, he'd send the Hindu Center a copy of the magazine and see what, how they responded to that. We also are working with two kind of museum-like presentations of Hinduism that are being developed. One is for the Vishnu Mandir in Toronto, and they're spending probably about $1.5 million U.S. dollars to build the building that it exhibits in. I mean, it's beautifully conceived with waterfalls and skylights and everything. Very nice structure. And so we looked through their material, and there's nothing on the four denominations. So I want to send that to them. with a covering letter now that we have it in print. And that long explanations of the six schools of Vedantic thought, you know, something that isn't really that useful to know. You know, it's more historic than anything else. And there's another exhibit being developed in outside of Chicago for a center that hasn't been built yet. And again, they left out the four denominations. So, very, very important part of understanding Hinduism in its practice. Philosophy is useful, but you won't understand Hindu practices unless you grab onto the four denominations. It gets very confusing. So, let's just some news, general news. You can see our church is developing nicely abroad, continuing to bring in some new members. So have a wonderful phase, everyone. Swamis can come forward first. Om Namah Shivaya.
Good morning, everyone. Is loud enough?
Okay. Testing.
Keep testing. Testing. One, two. I thought I'd start this morning's class with a brief review of our opening talk we gave on a couple days ago. Some of you weren't here, so it's good for those who weren't here, plus some of you may have forgotten already what I said. So many things happened in between then and now. So, of course, it was Aslesha, which I thought was interesting, the first day. So it was Yogaswami's nakshatra, so we received Yoga Swami's blessings on the first day of our Mahasamadhi observance. Very good sign. So then I went on to mention that usually when a memorial observance is held for a great person, the total focus is on the past. You know, he did this, he did this, he did this. He was a great person. And that's it. But, of course, in the case of Gurudeva, and in fact in the case of any Sadhguru, though of course we want to honor his accomplishments, it's even more important to focus on the ways his influence continues to live on in the lives of his devotees. So, how he lives is more important than what he did. So, then we went through the three ways I chose. Talk about how Gurudeva lives on, and the first one was by influencing us from the inner planes, and it's one of my perks. I get to receive some very wonderful email all the time, very inspiring. You know, sometimes three or four members of a family will write in the same day, each one telling about a dream of Gurudeva that they had. You know, the whole family was in the kitchen once. And with Gurudeva, so about three or four members of the family sent me the same dream the next day without knowing the other one did. So, because they don't talk that much, they just send it in. So, get to hear about some wonderful dream experiences. So, I chose two emails to share. First one is from a student who is just studying on her own. So, we don't really know her. She's not that close, never been here. And this was in 2002. She wrote in and said, "I just wanted to let you know that ever since Gurudeva had his Mahasamadhi, I have experienced an acceleration in my spiritual understanding and especially in my practices. I really feel that I am being helped by Gurudeva's energy now. Have others said that they are experiencing this as well?" So, of course, lots of people have said that. The way I sometimes respond if someone asks about that aspect is that you know, everyone who's practicing sadhana is moving forward through their karma, you know, the same karma. But they're moving forward more quickly, I think. You know, their spiritual progress has been accelerated by Gurudeva being on the inside. He's accelerating the progress. So depending on how much energy we're putting into our sadhana, our progress is accelerated accordingly. The other way I like to explain it is like Gurudeva is there on the inside, pulling each of us toward the state of consciousness that he is in. So how close we get depends upon us. But he's there. He's like pulling on a rope. You know, we're tied to the other rope. He's pulling on this rope. It's attached to each of those who are studying his teachings and pulling us toward the state of consciousness that he is in. So consequently, we're able to experience deeper states of consciousness now than we were before. So how all that works, I don't attempt to explain that, but that seems to be the result, whatever the process. Then there's a second email. This one's particularly nice, from one of our church members. I was walking with Gurudeva along a path through green hills with beautiful trees and flowers, like at the Adina. I said, "Oh, Gurudeva, it's so nice to see you. Seems like things are changing. How do we remember you? I wish you were here still." Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. We've probably said that to ourselves a thousand times. Gurudeva says, "I am here. As long as there is someone, even one person, reading my writings or sayings, I will be here." So that's a very interesting point. And I made it. Make sure I didn't lose that email. Middle of thousands of emails. 6,000 emails in my sent. Tried to look for it. Fortunately, I found it. So it shows the importance of Gurudeva's writings and how he's connected to his writings. He doesn't say, you know, as long as someone is standing in Kaudavol, or as long as someone is worshipping at Iravan, or as long as someone is here or there. No, it's not being in a place. It's studying his teachings. So, of course, we can do this from anywhere. We don't have to be here to study Gurudeva's teachings. So, you know, as long as we're studying Gurudeva's teachings, we're tying into him. And he's tying into us. And so that connection stays there and grows stronger according to the amount of effort we put into it. So consequently, we're very fortunate to have the Master Course Trilogy, which provides all the teachings. And for some of us, like me, if I lift all three, it provides some exercise as well. Heavy. So the idea of working from the inner planes is the theme that Gurudeva lives on, because he's working with us from the inner planes. So this naturally leads to the question, how can we improve our ability to work with Gurudeva in the inner planes? And what do we need to do? Did Gurudeva give us any guidelines or suggestions on how to better attune ourselves to the inner planes? Unfortunately, he did. I'll read the quote. But first, to summarize the quote, the idea is the repetition of mantras, japa yoga, just before sleep, after relaxing the body through hatha yoga and diaphragmatic breathing. So he's giving three things: mantras, hatha yoga, and diaphragmatic breathing. If those are done right before we go to sleep, then that helps us go deeper in our sleep and go into the inner planes. So there's a nice quote which I wanted to read from Merging with Shiva on this. When japa is well performed and the sincere desire is maintained to transcend the forces of the physical body and enter into the astral schools of learning, the aspirant would have dreamless nights. A deep sleep would prevail. There may be a few seconds of dreaming just before awakening, to which one should not pay any attention, as the astral body quickly enters the physical. But a deep dreamless sleep is in itself an indicator that the Purusha is totally detached from the physical forces and totally intact and functioning in the Devaloka. The Mayan Academy is an academy in the Devaloka in which rishis of the Nandinava Sampradaya teach, help and guide tens of thousands of devotees of God Shiva who have been influenced by the words and teachings of our Sampradaya. Unquote. Another suggestion Gurudeva makes is in the introduction of Merging with Shiva, where he suggests that the daily lessons of Merging with Shiva are read before sleep each night. And why he chose Merging with Shiva, of course, is it's the most mystical of the three books. It tends to take us deeper in consciousness. So I'll make the same comment I did on Sun 1, because it's important, even though it's repetitious. You may think just because you don't, when you wake up, remember being in the inner planes or remembering being with Gurudeva, you weren't. Some people think that way. It's a natural assumption, right? See, I don't remember being with Gurudeva. I don't remember being in the inner planes. Therefore, I wasn't. And then you hear other people talk about their dreams with Gurudeva, and all of a sudden, big green aura comes up. Oh, they're so lucky. They're with Gurudeva all the time. And, you know, I'm never with Gurudeva. But that's not the case. It's not quite so black and white. It has to do with the fact that the ability, shall we say, of some people to remember their dreams. Some people remember their dreams very, very well, but that's unusual. Most people don't. Don't remember their dreams, not meaning the dreams right before you awaken. I mean, meaning the dreams that started maybe at midnight or something, when you were really sound asleep. Some people remember them, others don't. Sometimes you remember them if you wake up, like at 1:30 or 2 in the morning, you might remember it because it was so recent. So just because you don't remember it doesn't mean it didn't happen. So therefore, how do you know it happened if you can't remember if it happened? Sounds like cognizant ability. Well, you have to ascertain the state of consciousness in which you're awakening. If you're awakening and you're kind of sleepy and this and that, and you know, you have to pull yourself together and have a cup of coffee or whatever before you really think clearly, you weren't in the inner plane. But you know, if you wake up and you're really energetic and dynamic and you feel inspired and kind of clear, you know, chances are you were in the inner planes during the night, because that's the energy that comes from the inner planes, the same energy that comes from meditation. So if you wake up and feel like you've been meditating, it means you were in the inner planes. If you wake up and feel like, you know, you had some unusual dreams you wish you didn't have and this and that, unless they only lasted a short time, you weren't in the inner planes. So how to figure out what was taught to you in the inner planes when you don't remember being in the inner planes is an even greater challenge. But it can be done. You just have to look for signs in your thinking. What does that mean? Maybe you have a new idea, a new perspective, a new thought, or a new understanding. Something is resolved. All of a sudden you say, gee, that doesn't bother me anymore. You have to look for something new. It would be intuitive. A new idea. It's there that wasn't there before. And if you find it, you know, it came from the inner planes. It came from being deep within during your sleep. Because you don't get those kinds of things just in an ordinary dream state. So that's one reason the ideal is to be able to wake up early, because we avoid the ordinary astral plane dreams, which become stronger right before and right after sunrise. So if for some reason you're sleeping late, either you just want to, or you got to bed late, you couldn't help it, you may notice that your dream state is kind of shallow and disturbed and more worldly, and feels like people are intruding into your private state of mind or something. Well, that's because you're sleeping late. So definitely it happens So that's why in yoga practice it's good to get up early, if at all possible. And you avoid those dreams, and also you're more attuned to the inner plane experience. If you had one, you can ferret it out more clearly without all that interference coming in and fogging up the mind. So that's that point. So that is Gurudeva lives on through influencing us from the inner planes. That's that topic.